I never said the rose was from me, he says. His voice is so low and serious it startles me. I meet his eyes. They're bright green. I remember when I was little, my mom used to say that God mixed the grass and Kent's eyes from the same color. Yeah, well, it's pretty obvious. I just want him to stop looking at me like that. He takes a deep breath. Look, I'm having a party tonight. That's when I see Rob loping into the cafeteria. Normally, I would wait for him to notice me, but today I can't. Rob! I yell out. He turns and sees me, gives me half a wave, and starts to turn around again. Rob, wait! I take off down the hallway. I'm not exactly running. Lindsay, Allie, Elodie, and I made a pact years ago never to run on school grounds, not even in gym class. Let's face it, sweating and huffing aren't exactly attractive. But it's a close call.
Whoa, slamster! Where's the fire?
Rob puts his arms around me and I bury my nose in his fleece. It smells a little like old pizza. Not the best smell, especially when it's mixed with lemon balm, but I don't care. My legs are shaking so badly, I'm afraid they'll give out. I just want to stand there forever, holding on to him. I missed you, I say into his chest. For a second, his arms tense around me, but when he tilts my face up toward his, he's smiling.
To get my valigram?
He asks. I nod. Thanks. My throat is tight and I'm worried I'll start to cry. It feels so good to have his arms around me like he's the only thing holding me up. Listen, Rob, about tonight, I'm not even sure what I'm going to say, but he cuts me off.
Okay. What is it now?
I pull back just a little bit so I can look at him.
Things are all crazy today. I think I might be sick or something else.
He laughs and pinches my nose with two fingers.
Oh, no. You are not getting out of this one.
He puts his forehead to mine and whispers.
I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
I know. Me too. I've imagined it so many times, the way the moon will be dipping past the trees and coming through the windows and lighting up triangles and squares on the walls, the way his fleece blanket will feel against my bare skin when I take my clothes off. And then I've imagined the moment afterward, after Rob has kissed me and told me he loved me and fallen asleep with his mouth just parted, and I sneak off to the bathroom and text Elodie and Lindsay and Allie. I did it. It's the middle part that's harder to picture. I feel my phone buzz in my back pocket. A new text. My stomach flips. I already know what it will say. You're right, I say to Rob, squeezing my arms around him. Maybe I should come over right after school. We can hang out all afternoon. All night.
You're cute.
Rob pulls away, adjusts his hat and his backpack.
My parents don't clear out till dinner time, though.
I don't care, we can watch a movie or something. Besides, Rob's looking over my shoulder now.
I heard about some party at what's-his-name's, dude with the bowler hat. Kent,
I say automatically. Rob knows his name, obviously. Everyone knows everyone here, but it's a power thing. I remember telling Kent, I shouldn't even know your name, and feel queasy. Voices are swelling through the hall, and people start passing Rob and me. I can feel them staring. They're probably hoping for a fight.
Yeah, Kent. I might stop by for a while. We can meet up there.
You really want to go? I'm trying to squash the panic welling up inside me. I lower my head and look up at him the way I've seen Lindsay do with Patrick when she's really desperate for something. It'll just mean less time with me.
We'll have plenty of time.
Rob kisses his fingers and taps them twice against my cheek.
Trust me. Have I ever let you down?
You'll let me down tonight. The thought comes to me before I can stop it. No, I say too loudly. Rob's not listening, though. Adam Marshall and Jeremy Forker have just joined us, and they're all doing the greeting thing where they jump on one another and wrestle. Sometimes I think Lindsay's right, and guys are just like animals. I pull out my phone to check my text, though I don't really need to. Party at Kent McFreaky's tonight. In? My fingers are numb as I text back. Obv. Then I go into lunch, feeling like the sound of 300 voices has weight, like it's a solid wind that will carry me up, up, and away. Before I wake.
So? You nervous?
Lindsay lifts one leg in the air and swivels it back and forth, admiring the shoes she's just stolen from Allie's closet. Music thumps from the living room. Allie and Elodie are out there singing their heads off to Like a Prayer. Allie's not even close to on key. Lindsay and I are lying on our backs on Allie's Mongo bed. Everything in Allie's house is 25% bigger than in a normal person's. The fridge, the leather chairs, the televisions, even the magnums of champagne her dad keeps in the wine cellar. Strictly hands off. Lindsay once said it made her feel like Alice in Wonderland. I settle my head against an enormous pillow that says, "The bitch is in." I've had 4 shots already, thinking it would calm me down, and above me the lights are winking and blurring. We've cracked all the windows open, but I'm still feeling feverish. "Don't forget to breathe," Lindsay's saying. "Don't freak out if it hurts a little, especially at first. Don't tense up. You'll make it worse." I'm feeling pretty nauseous, and Lindsay's not making it better. I couldn't eat all day, so by the time we got to Allie's house, I was starving and scarfed about 25 of the toast pesto goat cheese snacks that Allie whipped up. I'm not sure how well the goat cheese is mixing with the vodka. On top of it, Lindsay made me eat about 7 Listerine breath strips because the pesto had garlic in it, and she said Rob would feel like he was losing his virginity to an Italian line cook. I'm not even that nervous about Rob. I mean, I can't focus on being nervous about him. The party, the drive, the possibility of what will happen there, that's what's really giving me stomach cramps. At least the vodka's helped me breathe, and I'm not feeling shaky anymore. Of course, I can't tell Lindsay any of this, so instead I say, "I'm not gonna freak. I mean, everybody does it, right? If Anna Cartullo can do it..." Lindsay pulls a face. "Ew. Whatever you're doing, it's not what Anna Cartullo does. You and Rob are making love." She puts quotes in the air with her fingers and giggles. But I can tell she means it. "You think?"
"Of course."
She tilts her head to look at me.
"You don't?"
I want to ask, how do you know the difference? In movies, you can always tell when people are supposed to be together because music swells up behind them. Dumb, but true. Lindsay's always saying she couldn't live without Patrick, and I'm not sure if that's how you're supposed to feel or not. Sometimes when I'm standing in the middle of a crowded place with Rob and he puts his arm around my shoulders and pulls me close, like he doesn't want me to get bumped or spilled on or whatever, I feel a kind of heat in my stomach, like I've just had a glass of wine and I'm completely happy just for that second. I'm pretty sure that's what love is. So I say to Lindsay, "Of course I do." Lindsay giggles again and nudges me.
"So? Did he bite the bullet and just say it?"
"Say what?" She rolls her eyes.
"That he loves you."
I pause for just a second too long, thinking of his note. "Love ya." The kind of thing you pencil in somebody's yearbook when you don't know what else to say. Lindsay rushes on.
"He will. Guys are idiots. Bet you he says it tonight, just after you..."
She trails off and starts humping her hips up and down. I smack her with the pillow. "You're a dog, you know that?" She growls at me and bares her teeth. We laugh and then lie in silence for a minute, listening to Elodie's and Allie's howls from the other room. They're on to Total Eclipse of the Heart now. It feels nice to be lying there. Nice and normal. I think of all the times we must have laid in exactly this spot. Waiting for Elodie and Allie to finish getting ready, waiting to go out, waiting for something to happen, time ticking and then falling away, lost forever. and I suddenly wish I could remember each one singularly, like somehow if I could remember them all, I could have them back. Were you nervous? The first time, I mean? I'm kind of embarrassed to ask, so I say it quietly. I think the question catches Lindsay off guard. She blushes and starts picking at the braiding on Allie's bedspread, and for a moment there's an awkward silence. I'm pretty sure I know what she's thinking, though I would never say it out loud. Lindsay, Allie, Elodie, and I are as close as you can be, but there are still some things we never talk about. For example, even though Lindsay says Patrick is her first and only, this isn't technically true. Technically, her first was a guy she met at a party when she was visiting her stepbrother at NYU. They smoked pot, split a six-pack, and had sex. And he never knew she hadn't done it before. We don't talk about that. We don't talk about the fact that we can never hang out at Elodie's house after 5 o'clock because her mother will be home and drunk. We don't talk about the fact that Allie never eats more than a quarter of what's on her plate, even though she's obsessed with cooking and watches the Food Network for hours on end. We don't talk about the joke that for years trailed me down hallways, into classrooms, and on the bus that wove its way into my dreams. What's red and white and weird all over? Sam Kingston. And we definitely don't talk about the fact that Lindsay was the one who made it up. A good friend keeps your secrets for you. A best friend helps you keep your own secrets. Lindsay rolls over on her side and props herself on one elbow. I wonder if she's finally going to mention the guy at NYU. I don't even know his name, and the few times she's ever made reference to him, she called him the unmentionable. I wasn't nervous, she says quietly. Then she sucks in a deep breath and her face splits into a grin. I was horny, baby. Randy. She says it in a fake British accent and then jumps on top of me and starts making a humping motion. You're impossible, I say, pushing her off me. She rolls all the way off the bed, cackling. You love me. Lindsay gets up on her knees and blows the bangs out of her face. She leans forward and rests her elbows on the bed. She suddenly gets serious. Sam? Her eyes are wide and she drops her voice. I have to sit up to hear her over the music. Can I tell you a secret? Of course. My heart starts fluttering. She knows what's happening to me. It's happening to her, too. You have to promise not to tell. You have to swear not to freak out. She knows. She knows. It's not just me. My head clears and everything sharpens around me. I feel totally sober. I swear. The words barely come out. She leans forward until her mouth is only an inch from my ear. I... Then she turns her head and burps. Loudly. In my face. Jesus, Linz! I fan the air with my hand. She sinks onto her back again, kicking her legs into the air and laughing hysterically. What is wrong with you?
You should have seen your face.
Are you ever serious? I say it jokingly, but my whole body feels heavy with disappointment. She doesn't know. She doesn't understand. Whatever is happening, it's happening only to me. A feeling of complete aloneness overwhelms me like a fog. Lindsay dabs the corners of her eyes with a thumb and jumps to her feet.
I'll be serious when I'm dead.
That word sends a shock straight through me. Dead. So final, so ugly, so short. The warm feeling I've had since taking the shots drains out of me, and I lean over to shut Allie's window, shivering. The black mouth of the woods yawning open, Vicky Hallinan's face. I try to decide what will happen to me if it turns out I really have gone batshit insane. Just before eighth period, I stood 10 feet away from the main office, home to the principal, Ms. Winters, and the school psychiatrist, willing myself to go in and say the words, I think I'm going crazy. But then there was a bang, and Lauren Lornett shot into the hall, sniffling, probably crying over some boy drama or fight with her parents or something normal. In that second, all of the work I'd done to fit in vanished. Everything is different now. I'm different.
So, are we going or what?
Elodie bursts into the room in front of Allie. They're both breathless.
Let's do it.
Lindsay picks up her bag and swings it over one shoulder. Allie starts to giggle.
It's only 9:30, she says. And Sam already looks like she could barf.
I stand up and wait for a second while the ground steadies underneath me. I'll be fine. I'm fine.
Liar, Lindsay says and smiles.
The party. Take two.
This is how a horror movie starts, Allie says. Are you sure he's number 42?
I'm sure. My voice sounds like it's coming from a distance. A huge crush of fear has returned. I can feel it pressing on me from all directions, squeezing the breath out of me.
This better not screw with my paint job,
Lindsay says as a branch scrapes along the passenger door with the sound of a nail dragging against a chalkboard. The woods fall away and Kent's house comes looming out of the darkness, white and sparkling like it's made of ice. The way it just emerges there, surrounded on all sides by black, reminds me of the scene in Titanic when the iceberg rises out of the water and guts the ship open. We're all silent for a second. Tiny pellets of rain ping against the windshield and the roof, and Lindsay switches off her iPod. An old song pipes quietly from the radio. I can just make out the lyrics. Feel it now like you felt it then. Touch me now and around again.
It's almost as big as your house, Al, Lindsay says.
Almost, Allie says. I feel a tremendous wave of affection for her at that moment. Allie, who likes big houses and expensive cars and Tiffany jewelry and platform wedges and body glitter. Allie, who's not that smart and knows it, and obsesses over boys who aren't good enough for her. Allie, who's secretly an amazing cook. I know her. I get her. I know all of them. In the house, Dugius roars through the speakers.
All MCs in the house tonight. If your lyrics sound tight, then rock the mic.
The stairs roll underneath me. When we get upstairs, Lindsay takes the bottle of vodka away from me, laughing.
Slow down, Slam-a-lot. You got business to take care of.
Business? I start laughing a little gasps of it. It's so smoky I can hardly breathe. I thought it was making love.
The business of making love.
She leans in and her face swells like a moon.
No more vodka for a while, okay?
I feel myself nodding and her face recedes. She scans the room. I gotta find Patrick. You gonna be okay? Perfect, I say, trying to smile. I can't manage it. It's like the muscles in my face won't respond. She starts to turn away and I grab her wrist. Linz?
Yeah?
I'm gonna come with you, okay?
She shrugs. Yeah, sure, whatever. He's in the back somewhere. He just texted me.
We start pushing past people. Lindsay yells back to me.
It's like a maze up here.
Things are going past me in a blur, snippets of conversation and laughter, the feel of coats brushing against my skin, the smell of beer and perfume and shower gel and sweat, all of it whirling and spinning together. Everyone looks the way they do in dreams, familiar but not too clear, like they could morph into someone else at any second. I'm dreaming, I think. This is all a dream. This whole day has been a dream, and when I wake up, I'll tell Lindsay how the dream felt real and hours long, and she'll roll her eyes and tell me that dreams never last longer than 30 seconds. It's funny to think about telling Lindsay, who's tugging on my hand and tossing her hair impatiently in front of me, that I'm only dreaming of her, that she's not really here, and I giggle, starting to relax. It's all a dream. I can do whatever I want. I can kiss anybody I want to. And as we walk past groups of guys, I check them off in my head. Adam Marshall, Rasan Lucas, and Andrew Roberts. I could kiss each and every one if I wanted to. I see Kent standing in the corner talking to Phoebe Reifer, and I think I could walk up and kiss the heart-shaped mole under his eye, and it wouldn't make a difference. I don't know where the idea comes from. I would never kiss Kent, not even in a dream. But I could if I wanted to. Somewhere, I'm lying stretched out under a warm blanket on a big bed surrounded by pillows, my hands folded under my head, sleeping. I lean forward to tell Lindsay this, that I'm dreaming of yesterday, and maybe yesterday was its own dream too, when I see Bridget McGuire standing in a corner with her arm around Alex Lament's waist. She's laughing and he's bending down to nuzzle her neck. She looks up at that moment and sees me watching them. Then she takes his hand and drags him over to me, pushing other people out of the way.
"She'll know,"
she's saying over her shoulder to him, and then she turns her smile on me. Her teeth are so white, they're glowing.
"Did Mrs. Harbor give out the essay assignments today?"
"What?" I'm so confused it takes me a second to realize she's talking about English class.
"The essay assignments. For Macbeth?"
She nudges Alex and he says, "I missed seventh period." He meets my eyes and then looks away, taking a swig of beer. I don't say anything. I don't know what to say.
"So, did she give them out?"
Bridget looks like she always does, like a puppy just waiting for a treat.
"Alex had to skip. Doctor's appointment. His mom made him get some shot to, like, prevent meningitis. How lame is that? I mean, four people died of it last year. You have more of a chance of being hit by a car."
"He should get a shot to prevent herpes," Lindsay says, snickering, but so quietly I only hear because I'm standing right next to her. "It's probably too late, though."
"I don't know," I said to Bridget. "I cut."
I'm staring at Alex, watching his reaction. I'm not sure whether he noticed Lindsay and me standing outside of Hunan Kitchen today, peering inside. Doesn't seem like it. He and Anna had been huddled over some grayish meat congealing in a plastic bowl, just like I'd expected them to be. Lindsay had wanted to go in and mess with them, but I'd threatened to puke on her new Steve Madden boots if we even caught a whiff of that nasty meat and onion smell inside. By the time we left the country's best yogurt, they were gone, and we only saw them again briefly at the smoker's lounge. They were leaving just as Lindsay was lighting up. Alex gave Anna a quick kiss on the cheek, and we saw them walk off in two different directions. Alex toward the cafeteria, Anna toward the arts building. They were long gone by the time Lindsay and I passed the Nick Nazi on our daily patrol. They weren't busted today. And Bridget doesn't know where he really was during seventh. All of a sudden, things start clicking into place. All the fears I've been holding back, one right after another, like dominoes falling. I can't deny it anymore. Sarah Grundle got the parking space because we were late. That's why she's still in the semifinals. Anna and Alex didn't have a fight because I convinced Lindsay to keep walking. That's why they weren't caught out at the smoker's lounge. And that's why Bridget is hanging off Alex instead of crying in a bathroom. This isn't a dream. And it's not deja vu. It's really happening. It's happening again. It feels like my whole body goes to ice in that second. Bridget's babbling about having never cut a class, and Lindsay's nodding and looking bored, and Alex is drinking his beer, and then I really can't breathe. Fear is clamping down on me like a vice, and I feel like I might shatter into a million pieces right then and there. I want to sit down and put my head between my knees, but I'm worried that if I move or close my eyes or do anything, I'll just start to unravel. Head coming away from neck, coming away from shoulder, all of me floating away into nothing. The head bone disconnected from the neck bone disconnected from the backbone. I feel arms wrap around me from behind, and Rob's mouth is on my neck. But even he can't warm me up. I'm shivering uncontrollably.
"Sexy Sammy," he sing-songs, turning me around to him. "Where have you been all my life?"
"Rob," I'm surprised I can still speak, surprised I can still think. "I really need to talk to you."
"What's up, babe?"
His eyes are bleary and red.
Maybe it's because I'm terrified, but certain things seem sharper to me than they ever have. Clearer. I notice for the first time that the crescent-shaped scar under his nose makes him look kind of like a bull. We can't do it here. We need to go somewhere, a room or something, somewhere private. He grins and leans into me, breathing alcohol on my face while he tries to kiss me.
I get it. It's that kind of conversation.
I'm serious, Rob. I shake my head. I'm not feeling right.
You're never feeling right.
He pulls away, frowning at me.
There's always something, you know?
What are you talking about? He sways a little bit on his feet and imitates,
I'm tired tonight. My parents are upstairs. Your parents will hear.
He shakes his head.
I've been waiting months for this, Sam.
The tears are coming. My head throbs with the effort of keeping them back. This has nothing to do with that, I swear.
Then what does it have to do with?
He crosses his arms. I just really need you right now. I barely get the words out. I'm surprised he even hears me. He sighs and rubs his forehead.
All right. I'm sorry.
He puts one hand on the top of my head. I nod. Tears start coming and he wipes two of them away with his thumb.
Let's talk, okay? We'll go somewhere quiet.
He rattles his empty beer cup at me.
Can I at least get a topper first?
Yeah, sure, I say, even though I want to beg him to stay with me, to put his arms around me and never let go.
You're the best,
he says, ducking down to kiss my cheek.
No crying. We're at a party, remember? It's supposed to be fun.
He starts backing away and holds up his hand, fingers extended.
5 minutes.
I press myself against the wall and wait. I don't know what else to do. People are going past me and I keep my hair down and in my face so no one will be able to tell the tears are still coming. The party is loud, but somehow it seems remote. Words are distorted and music sounds the way it does at a carnival, like all the notes are off balance and just colliding with one another. 5 minutes pass, then 7, 10 minutes pass, and I tell myself I'll wait 5 more minutes and then go look for him, even though the idea of moving seems impossible. After 12 minutes, I text, "Where are you?" But then remember that yesterday he told me he'd set his phone down somewhere. Yesterday. Today. And this time, when I imagine myself lying somewhere, I'm not sleeping. This time, I imagine myself stretched out on a cold stone slab, skin as white as milk, lips blue, and hands folded across my chest like they've been placed there. I take a deep breath and force myself to focus on other things. I count the Christmas lights framing the E.T. movie poster over a couch, and then I count the bright red glowing cigarette butts weaving around through the half-darkness like fireflies. I'm not a math geek or anything, but I've always liked numbers. I like how you can just keep stacking them up, one on top of the other, until they fill any space, any moment. I told my friends this one day, and Lindsay said I was going to be the kind of old woman who memorizes phone books and keeps flattened cereal boxes and newspapers piled from floor to ceiling in her house, looking for messages from space in the barcodes. But a few months later, I was sleeping over, and she confessed that sometimes when she's upset about something, she recites this Catholic bedtime prayer she memorized when she was little, even though she's half Jewish and doesn't even believe in God anyway. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray thee, Lord, my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray thee, Lord, my soul to take. She'd seen it embroidered on a pillow in her piano teacher's house, and we laughed about how lame embroidered pillows were. But until I fell asleep that night, I couldn't get the prayer out of my head. That one line kept replaying over and over in my mind. If I should die before I wake. I'm just about to force myself away from the wall when I hear Rob's name. 2 sophomores have stumbled into the room giggling, and I strain to hear what they're saying.
His second in 2 hours.
No, Matt Kessler did the first one.
They both did. Did you see how Aaron Stern is, like, holding him above the keg completely upside down?
That's what a keg stand is, duh.
Rob Cochran is so hot.
Shh.
Oh, my God.
One of the girls elbows the other one when she notices me. Her face goes white. She's probably terrified. She's been talking about my boyfriend, misdemeanor. But more specifically, she's been talking about how hot he is. Felony. If Lindsay were here, she would freak out, call the girls whores, and get them booted from the party. If she were here, she would expect me to freak out. Lindsay thinks that underclassmen, specifically sophomore girls, need to be put in their place. Otherwise, they'll overrun the universe like cockroaches, protected from nuclear attack by an armor of Tiffany jewelry and shiny lip gloss shells. I don't have the energy to give these girls attitude, though, and I'm glad Lindsay's not with me so she can't give me crap about it. I should have known Rob wouldn't come back. I think about today, when he told me to trust him, when he said that he'd never let me down. I should have told him he was full of it. I need to get out. I need to be away from the smoke and the music. I need a place to think. I'm still freezing, and I'm sure I look awful, though I don't feel like I'm going to cry anymore. We once watched this health video about the symptoms of shock, and I'm pretty much the poster child for all of them. Difficulty breathing, cold, clammy hands, dizziness. Knowing this makes me feel even worse. Which just goes to show, you should never pay attention in health class. The line for both bathrooms is 4 deep, and all of the rooms are packed. It's 11 o'clock, and everyone who's planned on showing is here. A couple of people say my name, and Tara Flute gets in my face and says, "Oh my God, I love your earrings. Did you get them at..." "Not now." I cut her off and keep going, desperate to find somewhere dark and quiet. To my left is a closed door, the one with all the bumper stickers plastered to it. I grip the doorknob and shake it. It doesn't open, of course. That's the VIP room. I turn around and Kent is standing behind me smiling. "You've got to be on the list." He leans against the wall. "Or slip the bouncer a 20. Whichever." I was looking for the bathroom. Kent tilts his head toward the other side of the hall where Ronica Masters, obviously drunk, is hammering on a door with her fist.
"Come on, Kristen," she's yelling. "I really have to pee."
Kent turns back to me and raises his eyebrows. "My bad," I say and try to push past him.
"Are you okay?"
Kent doesn't exactly touch me, but he holds his hand up like he's thinking about it. "You look, I'm fine." The last thing in the world I need right now is pity from Kent McFuller, and I shove back into the hallway. I've just decided to go outside and call Lindsay from the porch. I'll tell her I need to leave ASAP. I have to leave. When Elodie barrels into the hall, throwing her arms around me.
"Where the hell have you been?" she screeches, kissing me.
She's sweating, and I think of Izzy climbing into my bed and putting her arms around me, tugging on my necklace. I should never have gotten out of bed today.
"Let me guess. Let me guess."
Elodie leaves her arms around me and starts bumping her hips like we're grinding on a dance floor. She rolls her eyes to the ceiling and starts moaning.
"Oh, Rob. Oh, Rob. Yeah, just like that."
"You're a pervert." I push her off me. "You're worse than Otto."
She laughs and grabs my hand, starts dragging me toward the back room.
"Come on, everyone's in here."
"I have to go," I say. The music back here is louder and I'm yelling, "I don't feel good."
"What?"
"I don't feel good." She points to her ear like, "I can't hear you." I'm not sure if it's true or not. Her palms are wet and I try to pull away, but at that second, Lindsay and Allie spot me and they start squealing, jumping all over me.
"I was looking for you for ages," Lindsay says, waving her cigarette.
"In Patrick's mouth, maybe," Allie snorts.
"She was with Rob."
Elodie points at me, swaying on her feet.
"Look at her. She looks guilty."
"Hussy,"
Lindsay screeches. Allie pipes in with, "Trollop," and Elodie yells out,
"Harlot."
This is an old joke of ours. Lindsay decided slut was too boring last year. I'm going home, I say. You don't have to drive me, I'll figure it out. Lindsay must think I'm kidding.
Go home? We only got here like an hour ago.
She leans forward and whispers,
Besides, I thought you and Rob were going to, you know.
As though she didn't just scream out in front of everybody that I already had. I changed my mind. I do my best to sound like I don't care, and the effort it takes is exhausting. I'm angry at Lindsay without knowing why. For not ditching the party with me, I guess. I'm angry at Elodie for dragging me back here, and at Allie for always being so clueless. I'm angry at Rob for not caring how upset I am, and I'm angry at Kent for caring. I'm angry at everyone and everything, and in that second, I fantasize about the cigarette Lindsay's waving, catching on the curtains, about fire racing over the room and consuming everyone. Then, immediately, I feel guilty. The last thing I need is to morph into one of those people who's always wearing black and doodling guns and bombs on her notebook. Lindsay's gaping at me like she can see what I'm thinking. Then I realize she's looking over my shoulder. Elodie turns pink. Allie's mouth starts opening and closing like a fish's. There's a dip in the noise of the party like someone has just hit pause on a soundtrack. Juliet Sykes. I know it will be her before I turn around, but I'm still surprised when I see her, still struck with that same sense of wonder. She's pretty. Today, when I saw her drifting through the cafeteria, she looked like she always did, hair hanging in her face, baggy clothing, shrunken into herself like she could be anyone, anywhere, a phantom or a shadow. But now she's standing straight, and her hair is pulled back, and her eyes are glittering. She walks across the room toward us. My mouth goes dry. I want to say no, but she's standing in front of Lindsay before I can get the word out. I see her mouth moving, but what she says takes a second to understand, like I'm hearing it from underwater. You're a bitch. Everyone is whispering, staring at our little huddle. Me, Lindsay, Elodie, Allie, and Juliet Sykes. I feel my cheeks burning. The sound of voices begins to swell. What did you say? Lindsay's gritting her teeth. A bitch. A mean girl. A bad person. Juliet turns to Elodie. You're a bitch. To Allie. You're a bitch. Finally, her eyes click on mine. They're exactly the color of sky. You're a bitch. The voices are a roar now, people laughing and screaming out, Psycho! You don't know me! I croak out at last, finding my voice, but Lindsay has already stepped forward and drowns me out. I'd rather be a bitch than a psycho, she snarls and puts two hands on Juliet's shoulders and shoves. Juliet stumbles backward, pinwheeling her arms, and it's all so horrible and familiar. It's happening again. It's actually happening. I close my eyes. I want to pray, but all I can think is why? When I open my eyes, Juliet is coming toward me, drenched, arms outstretched. She looks up at me, and I swear to God, it's like she knows, like she can see straight into me, like this is somehow my fault. I feel like I've been punched in the stomach, and the air goes out of me, and I lunge at her without thinking, push her, and send her backward. She collapses into a bookshelf and then spins off of it, grabbing the doorframe to steady herself. Then she ducks out into the hallway. Can you believe it? Someone is screeching behind me. Juliet Sykes is packing some cojones!
Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, man.
People are laughing and Lindsay leans over to Elodie and says, Freak. The empty bottle of vodka is dangling from her hand. She must have dumped the rest on Juliet. I start shoving my way out of the room. It seems as though even more people have come in and it's almost impossible to move. I'm really pushing, using my elbows when I have to, and everyone's giving me weird looks. I don't care. I need out. I finally make it to the door and there's Kent, staring at me, with his mouth set in a line. He shifts like he's about to block me. I hold up my hand.
Don't even think about it.
The words come out as a growl. Without a sound, he moves so I can squeeze past him. When I'm halfway down the hall, I hear him shout out, "Why?" "Because!" I yell back. But really, I'm thinking the same thing. Why is this happening to me? Why? Why? Why?
How come Sam always gets shotgun?
Because you're always too drunk to call it.
I can't believe you bailed on Rob like that, Allie says.
She's got her coat hunched up around her ears. Lindsay's car is so cold, our breaths are all solid white vapor.
You're gonna be in so much trouble tomorrow.
If there is a tomorrow, I almost say. I left the party without saying goodbye to Rob, who was stretched out on a sofa, his eyes half shut. I've been locked in an empty bathroom on the first floor for a half hour before that, sitting on the cold, hard rim of a bathtub, listening to the music pulsing through the walls and ceiling. Lindsay had insisted I wear bright red lipstick, and when I checked my face in the mirror, I saw that it had begun to bleed away from my lips, like a clown's. I took it off slowly with balled-up tissues which I left floating in the toilet bowl, little blooming flowers of pink. At a certain point, your brain stops trying to rationalize things. At a certain point, it gives up, shuts off, shuts down. Still, as Lindsay turns the car around, driving up on Kent's lawn to do it, tires spinning in the mud, I'm afraid. Trees, as white and frail as bone, are dancing wildly in the wind. The rain is hammering the roof of the car, and sheets of water on the windows make the world look like it's disintegrating. The clock on the dashboard is glowing, 12:38. I'm gripping my seat as Lindsay speeds down the driveway, branches whipping past us on either side. "What about the paint job?" I say, my heart hammering in my chest. I try to tell myself I'm okay, I'm fine, that nothing's going to happen, but it doesn't do any good.
"Screw it," she says. "Car's busted anyway. Have you seen the bumper?"
"Maybe you stopped hitting parked cars," Elodie says with a snort.
"Maybe if you had a car."
Lindsay takes one hand off the wheel and leans over, reaching for her bag at my feet. As she tips, she jerks the steering wheel and the car runs up a little into the woods. Allie slides across the back seat and collapses into Elodie, and they both start laughing. I reach over and try to grab the wheel.
"Jesus, Linz!"
Lindsay straightens up and elbows me off. She shoots me a look and then starts fumbling with a pack of cigarettes.
"What's up with you?"
"Nothing, I look out the window, biting back tears that are suddenly threatening to come. "I just want you to pay attention, that's all."
"Yeah? Well, I want you to keep off the wheel."
"Come on, guys, no fighting," Allie says.
"Give me a smoke, Linz."
Elodie's half reclining on the back seat, and she flails her arms wildly.
"Only if you light one for me,"
Lindsay says, tossing her pack into the back seat. Elodie lights two cigarettes and passes one to Lindsay. Lindsay cracks a window and exhales a plume of smoke. Allie screeches,
"Please, please, no windows. I am about to drop dead from pneumonia."
"You're about to drop dead when I kill you," Elodie says.
"If you were gonna die," I blurt out, "how would you want it to be?"
"Never," Lindsay says.
"I'm serious." My palms are damp with sweat and I wipe them on the seat cushion.
"In my sleep," Allie says.
"Eating my grandma's lasagna,"
Elodie says and then pauses and adds,
"or having sex."
Which makes Allie shriek with laughter.
"On an airplane?"
Lindsay says.
"If I'm going down, I want everyone to go down with me."
She makes a diving motion with her hand.
"Do you think you'll know, though?
It's suddenly important for me to talk about this. I mean, do you think you'll have an idea of it, like, before?" Allie straightens up and leans forward, hooking her arms over the back of our seats.
"One day, my grandfather woke up, and he swore he saw this guy all in black at the foot of his bed. Big hood, no face. He was holding this sword or whatever that thingy is called. It was death, you know? And then later that day, he went to the doctor and they diagnosed him with pancreatic cancer. The same day."
Elodie rolls her eyes.
"He didn't die, though."
"He could have died." That story doesn't make any sense.
Can we change the subject?
Lindsay brakes for just a second before yanking the car out onto the wet road.
This is so morbid.
Allie giggles.
SAT word alert!
Lindsay cranes her neck back and tries to blow smoke in Allie's face.
Not all of us have the vocabulary of a 12-year-old.
Lindsay turns onto Route 9, which stretches in front of us, a giant silver tongue. A hummingbird is beating its wings in my chest, rising, rising, fluttering into my throat. I want to go back to what I was saying. I want to say, you would know, right? You would know before it happened. But Elodie bumps Allie out of the way and leans forward, the cigarette dangling from her mouth, trumpeting, music. She grabs for the iPod.
Are you wearing your seatbelt?
I say, I can't help it. The terror is everywhere now, pressing down on me, squeezing the breath from me, and I think, if you don't breathe, you'll die. The clock ticks forward. 12:39. Elodie doesn't even answer, just starts scrolling through the iPod. She finds Splinter, and Allie slaps her and says it should be her turn to pick the music anyway. Lindsay tells them to stop fighting, and she tries to grab the iPod from Elodie, taking both hands off the wheel, steadying it with one knee. I grab for it again, and she shouts, "Get off!" She's laughing. Elodie knocks the cigarette out of Lindsay's hand, and it lands between Lindsay's thighs. The tires slide a little on the wet road, and the car is full of the smell of burning. "If you don't breathe..." Then all of a sudden, there's a flash of white in front of the car. Lindsay yells something, words I can't make out, something like sit, or shit, or sight. And suddenly, well, you know what happens next. Chapter 3. In my dream, I am falling forever through darkness. Falling, falling, falling. Is it still falling if it has no end? And then a shriek, something ripping through the soundlessness, an awful high wailing like an animal or an alarm. Beep, 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 beep. I wake up stifling a scream. I shut off the alarm, trembling, and lie back against my pillows. My throat is burning, and I'm covered in sweat. I take long, slow breaths and watch my room lighten as the sun inches its way over the horizon, things beginning to emerge. The Victoria's Secret sweatshirt on my floor. The collage Lindsay made me years ago with quotes from our favorite bands and cut-up magazines. I listen to the sounds from downstairs, so familiar and constant it's like they belong to the architecture, like they've been built up out of the ground with the walls. The clanking of my father in the kitchen, shelving dishes. The frantic, scrabbling sound of our pug, Pickle, trying to get out the back door, probably to pee and run around in circles. A low murmur that means my mom's watching the morning news. When I'm ready, I suck in a deep breath and reach for my phone. I flip it open. The date flashes up at me. Friday, February 12th. Cupid Day.
Get up, Fammy!
Izzy pokes her head in the door.
Mommy says you're going to be late.
Tell Mom I'm sick. Izzy's blonde bob disappears again. Here's what I remember. I remember being in the car. I remember Elodie and Allie fighting over the iPod. I remember the wild spinning of the wheel and seeing Lindsay's face as the car sailed toward the woods, her mouth open and her eyebrows raised in surprise. As though she'd just run into someone she knew in an unexpected place. But after that, nothing. After that, only the dream. This is the first time I really think it. The first time I allow myself to think it. That maybe the accidents, both of them, were real. And maybe I didn't make it. Maybe when you die, time folds in on you and you bounce around inside this little bubble forever, like the after-death equivalent of the movie Groundhog Day. It's not what I imagined death would be like, not what I imagined would come afterward, but then again, it's not like there's anyone around to tell you about it. Be honest. Are you surprised that I didn't realize sooner? Are you surprised that it took me so long to even think the word death? dying. Dead. Do you think I was being stupid? Naive? Try not to judge. Remember that we're the same, you and me. I thought I would live forever, too.
Sam, my mom pushes open the door and leans against the frame. Izzy said you felt sick.
I think I have the flu or something.
I know I look like crap, so it should be believable. My mom sighs like I'm being difficult on purpose. Lindsay will be here any second.
I don't think I can go in today. The idea of school makes me want to curl up in a ball and sleep forever.
On Cupid Day? My mom raises her eyebrows. She glances at the fur-trimmed tank top that's laid out neatly over my desk chair, the only item of clothing that isn't lying on the floor or hanging from a bedpost or a doorknob.
Did something happen?
No, Mom.
I try to swallow the lump in my throat. The worst is knowing I can't tell anybody what's happening or what's happened to me. Not even my mom. I guess it's been years since I talked to her about important stuff, but I start wishing for the days when I believed she could fix anything. It's funny, isn't it? When you're young, you just want to be older, and then later you wish you could go back to being a kid. My mom's searching my face really intensely. I feel like at any second I could break down and blurt out something crazy, so I roll away from her, facing the wall.
You love Cupid Day, my mom prods. Are you sure nothing happened? You didn't fight with your friends?
No, of course not.
She hesitates. Did you fight with Rob? That makes me want to laugh. I think about the fact that he left me waiting upstairs at Kent's party, and I almost say, not yet.
No, Mom, God.
Don't use that tone of voice. I'm just trying to help.
Yeah, well, you're not.
I bury deeper under the covers, keeping my back turned to her. I hear rustling and think she'll come and sit next to me. She doesn't, though. Freshman year, after a big fight, I drew a line in red nail polish just inside my door, and I told her if she ever came past the line, I'd never speak to her again. Most of the nail polish is chipped off by now, but in places you can still see it spotted over the wood like blood. I meant it at the time, but I'd expected her to forget after a while. But since that day, she's never once stepped foot in my room. It's a bummer in some ways, since she never surprises me by making up my sheets anymore or leaving folded laundry or a new sundress on my bed like she did when I was in middle school. But at least I know she's not rooting through my drawers while I'm at school looking for drugs or sex toys or whatever. If you want to come out here, I'll get the thermometer, she says. I don't think I have a fever. There's a chip in the wall in the exact shape of an insect, and I push my thumb against the wall, squishing it. I can practically feel my mom put her hands on her hips. Listen, Sam, I know it's second semester, and I know you think that gives you the right to slack off.
Mom, that's not it.
I bury my head under the pillow, feeling like I could scream. I told you, I don't feel good. I'm half afraid she'll ask me what's wrong and half hoping she will. She only says, all right, I'll tell Lindsay you're thinking of going in late. Maybe you'll feel better after a little more sleep. I doubt it.
Maybe, I say, and a second later I hear the door click shut behind her. I close my eyes and reach back into those final moments, the last memories, Lindsay's look of surprise and the trees lit up like teeth in the headlights, the wild roar of the engine searching for a light, a thread that will connect this moment to that one, a way to sew together the days so that they make sense. But all I get is blackness. I can't hold back my tears anymore. They come all at once, and before I know it, I'm sobbing and snotting all over my best Ethan Allen pillows. A little later, I hear scratching against my door. Pickle has always had a dog sense for when I'm crying, and in sixth grade, after Rob Cochran said I was too big of a dork for him to go out with, right in the middle of the cafeteria, in front of everybody, Pickle sat on my bed and licked the tears off one after another. I don't know why that's the example that pops into my head, but thinking about that moment makes a new rush of anger and frustration swell up inside of me. It's strange how much the memory affects me. I've never mentioned that day to Rob. I doubt he remembers. But I've always liked to think about it when we're walking down the hallway, our fingers interlaced, or when we're all hanging out in Tara Flute's basement and Rob looks over at me and winks. I like to think how funny life is, how so much changes, how people change. But now I just wonder when exactly I became cool enough for Rob Cochran. After a while, the scratching on my door stops. Pickle has finally realized he's not getting in, and I hear his paws ticking against the floor as he trots off. I don't think I've ever felt so alone in my life. I cry until it seems amazing that one person could have so many tears. It seems like they must be coming from the very tips of my toes. Then I sleep without dreaming. Escape tactics. I wake up thinking about a movie I once saw. The main character dies somehow, I forget how, but he's only half dead. One part of him is lying there in a coma, and one part of him is wandering the world, kind of in limbo. The point is, so long as he's not completely 100% dead, a piece of him is trapped in this in-between place. This gives me hope for the first time in 2 days. The idea that I might be lying somewhere in a coma, my family bending over me and everyone worrying and filling my hospital room with flowers, actually makes me feel good. Because if I'm not dead, at least not yet, there may be a way to stop it. My mom drops me off in Upper Lot just before third period starts. 0.22 miles or not, I will not be seen getting out of my mom's maroon 2003 Accord, which she won't trade in because she says it's fuel efficient. Now I can't wait to get to school. I have a gut feeling I'll find the answers there. I don't know how or why I'm stuck in this time loop, but the more I think about it, the more convinced I am that there's a reason for it. See you later, I say, and start to pop out of the car. But something stops me. It's the idea that's been bugging me for the past 24 hours, what I was trying to talk to my friends about in the tank. How you might not ever really know. How you might be walking down the street one day and bam, blackness. It's cold, Sam. My mom leans over the passenger seat and gestures for me to shut the door. I turn around and stoop down to look at her. It takes me a second to work the words out of my mouth, but I mumble, "I love you." I feel so weird saying it. It comes out more like olive juice. I'm not even sure if she understands me. I slam the door quickly before she can respond. It's probably been years since I've said "I love you" to either of my parents, except on Christmas or birthdays or when they say it first and it's pretty much expected. It leaves me with a weird feeling in my stomach, part relief and part embarrassment and part regret. As I'm walking toward school, I make a vow. There's not going to be an accident tonight. And whatever it is, this bubble or hiccup in time, I'm busting out. Here's another thing to remember. Hope keeps you alive. Even when you're dead, it's the only thing that keeps you alive. The bell has already rung for third period, so I book it to Chem. I get there just in time to take a seat, big surprise, next to Lauren Lornet. The quiz goes off, same as yesterday and the day before, except by now I can answer the first question myself. Pen, ink, working, Mr. Tierney, book, slam, jump. "Keep it," Lauren whispers to me, practically batting her eyelashes at me. "You're going to need a pen." I start to try to pass it back as usual, but something in her expression sparks a memory. I remember coming home after Tara Flute's pool party in 7th grade and seeing my face in the mirror lit up exactly like that, like somebody had handed me a winning lottery ticket and told me my life was about to change. "Thanks." I stuff the pen into my bag. She's still making that face. I can see it out of the corner of my eye, and after a minute I whip around and say, "You shouldn't be so nice to me." "What?" Now she looks completely stunned. Definitely an improvement. I have to whisper because Tierney's started his lesson again. Chemical reactions, blah, 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 transfiguration. Put two liquids together and they form a solid. 2 + 2 does not equal 4. "Nice to me. You shouldn't be." "Why not?" She squinches up her forehead so her eyes nearly disappear. "Because I'm not nice to you." The words are surprisingly hard to get out. "You're nice," Lauren says, looking at her hands, but she obviously doesn't mean it. She looks up and tries again. You don't... She trails off, but I know what she's going to say. You don't have to be nice to me. Exactly, I say.
Girls?
Mr. Tierney bellows, slamming his fist down on his lab station. I swear he goes practically neon. Lauren and I don't talk for the rest of class, but I leave Chem feeling good, like I've done the right thing.
That's what I like to see.
Mr. Daimler drums his fingers on my desk as he walks the aisles at the end of class collecting homework. A big smile, it's a beautiful day.
It's supposed to rain later.
Mike Hefner interjects and everyone laughs. He's an idiot. Mr. Daimler doesn't skip a beat.
And it's Cupid Day. Love is in the air.
He looks straight at me and my heart stops for a second.
Everyone should be smiling.
Just for you, Mr. Daimler. I say, making my voice extra sweet. More giggles and one loud snort from the back. I turn around and see Kent, head down, scribbling furiously on the cover of his notebook. Mr. Daimler laughs and says,
And here I thought I'd gotten you excited about differential equations.
You got her excited about something,
Mike mutters. More laughter from the class. I'm not sure if Mr. Daimler hears. He doesn't seem to, but the tips of his ears turn red. The whole class has been like this. I'm in a good mood, certain everything will be okay. I've got it all figured out. I'm going to get a second chance. Plus, Mr. Daimler's been paying me extra attention. After the Cupids came in, he took a look at my four roses, raised his eyebrows, and said, I must have secret admirers everywhere. Not so secret, I said, and he winked at me. After class, I gather up my stuff and go out into the hall, pausing for just a second to check over my shoulder. Sure enough, Kent's bounding along after me, shirt untucked, messenger bag half open and slapping against his thigh. What a mess. I start walking toward the cafeteria. Today, I looked more carefully at his note. The tree is sketched in black ink, each dip and shadow in the bark shaded perfectly. The leaves are tiny and diamond-shaped. The whole thing must have taken him hours. I stuck it between two pages of my math book so it wouldn't get crushed. Hey, he says, catching up with me. Did you get my note? I almost say to him, it's really good, but something stops me. Don't drink and love? Is that some kind of a catchphrase I don't know about? I consider it my civic duty to spread the word. Kent puts his hand over his heart. A thought flashes. You wouldn't be talking to me if you could remember. But I push it aside. This is Kent McFuller. He's lucky I'm talking to him at all. Besides, I don't plan on being at the party tonight. No party, no Juliet Sykes, no reason for Kent to wig out on me. Most important, no accident.
More like spread the weirdness, I say. I take that as a compliment.
Kent suddenly looks serious. He scrunches up his face so that all the light freckles on his nose come together like a constellation.
Why do you flirt with Mr. Daimler? He's a perv, you know.
I'm so surprised by the question it takes me a second to answer. Mr. Daimler is not a perv.
Trust me, he is.
Jealous?
Hardly.
I don't flirt with him anyway. Kent rolls his eyes.
Sure.
I shrug my shoulders. Why so interested? Kent goes red and drops his eyes to the floor.
No reason,
he mumbles. My stomach dips a little bit and I realize a part of me was hoping his answer would be different, more personal. Of course, if Kent did confess his undying love for me right there in the hallway, it would be disastrous. Despite his weirdness, I have no desire to publicly humiliate him. He's nice. And we were childhood friends and all that. But I could never, ever, ever date him. Not in a million lifetimes. Not in my lifetime, anyway. The one I want back. Where yesterdays are followed by today's and then tomorrow's. The bowler hat alone makes it impossible. Listen, Kent shoots me a look out of the corner of his eye.
My parents are going away this weekend, and I'm having some people over tonight.
Uh-huh.
Up ahead, I see Rob loping toward the cafeteria. At any second, he'll spot me. I can't handle seeing him right now. My stomach clenches, and I leap in front of Kent, turning my back to the cafeteria. Where's your house again? Kent looks at me strangely. I did basically just set myself up like a human barricade.
Off Route 9? You don't remember?
I don't respond, and he looks away, shrugging. I guess you wouldn't, really. You were only there a few times. We moved just before middle school from Terrace Place. You remember my old house on Terrace Place, right?
The smile is back. It's true. His eyes are exactly the color of grass.
You used to hang out in the kitchen and steal all the good cookies, and I chased you around these huge maple trees in the front yard, remember?
As soon as he mentions the maple trees, a memory rises up, expanding like something breaking the surface of water and rippling outward. We were sitting in this little space in between two enormous roots that curved out of the ground like animal spines. I remember that he split two maple wing seeds and stuck one on his nose and one on mine, telling me that this way everyone would know we were in love. I was probably only 5 or 6.
The last thing I need is for him to remind me of the good old days when I was all knees and nose and glasses and he was the only boy who would come near me. Maybe. Trees kind of all look the same to me, you know?
He laughs, even though I wasn't trying to be funny.
So, you think you'll come tonight? To my party?
This brings me back to reality. The party. I shake my head and start backing away. No. I don't think so. His smile falters a little.
It'll be fun.
Big senior memories, best time of our lives, and all that crap.
Right, I say sarcastically. High school heaven. I turn around and start walking away from him. The cafeteria is packed, and as I approach the double doors, one of which is propped open with an old tennis shoe, the noise of the students greets me with a roar.
You'll come.
He calls after me.
I know you will.
Don't hold your breath, I call back, and I almost add, it's better this way. The rules of survival.
What do you mean you can't go out?
Allie's looking at me like I just said I wanted to go to prom with Ben Farsky, or Fartsky, as we've been calling him since 4th grade. I sigh. I just don't feel like it, okay? I switch tactics and try again. We go out every weekend. I don't know. I want to stay in like we used to.
We used to stay in because we couldn't get into any senior parties, Allie says.
Speak for yourself, Lindsay says. This is harder than I thought it would be.
I flash on my mom asking if I'd had a fight with Rob, and before I can think too much about it, I blurt out, it's Rob, okay? We're having issues.
I flip open my phone, checking for texts for the millionth time. When I first came into the cafeteria, Rob was standing behind the registers, loading his fries with ketchup and barbecue sauce, his favorite. I couldn't bring myself to go up to him, so instead, I hurried to our table in the senior section and sent him a text. We have to talk. He texted back right away.
About?
Tonight, I wrote back. And since then, my phone's been silent. Across the cafeteria, Rob is leaning against the vending machines talking to Adam Marshall. He has his hat twisted sideways on his head. He thinks it makes him look older. I used to love collecting all these little facts about him, storing them together and holding them close inside of me. Like if I gathered up all the details and remembered them. The fact that he likes barbecue sauce but not mustard, that his favorite team is the Yankees even though he prefers basketball to baseball, that once when he was little he broke his leg trying to jump over a car. I would totally understand him. I used to think that's what love was. Knowing someone so well he was like a part of you. But more and more I'm feeling like I don't know Rob.
Allie's jaw actually drops.
But you're supposed to, you know. She kind of looks like a mounted fish with her mouth open like that, so I turn away, fighting the urge to laugh.
We were supposed to, but I've never been a good liar and my brain goes totally blank.
But,
Lindsay prompts. I reach into my bag and pull out the note he sent me, which is now crumpled and has a piece of gum, half unwrapped, sticking to it. I push it across the table. But this. Lindsay wrinkles her nose and flips open the card with the very tips of her fingernails. Allie and Elodie lean over and they both read. They're all silent for a second afterward. Finally, Lindsay closes the card and pushes it back to me.
It's not that bad, she says.
It's not that good, either. I was only trying to fake an excuse to keep us away from the party tonight, but as soon as I start talking about Rob, I get really worked up. Love ya? What kind of crap is that? We've been going out since October.
He's probably just waiting to say it, Elodie says. She pushes the bangs out of her eyes.
Steve doesn't say it to me.
Well, that's different. You don't expect him to say it.
Elodie looks away quickly, and it occurs to me that maybe, despite everything, she does. There's an awkward pause, and Lindsay jumps in.
I don't see what the trauma is. You know Rob likes you. It's not like it would be a one-night stand or anything.
He likes me, but I'm about to confess that I'm not sure that we're good together, but at the last second, I can't. They would think I was insane. I don't even understand it myself, really. It's like the idea of him is better than the him of him. Look, I'm not gonna have sex with him just so he'll say that he loves me, you know? I don't even mean for the words to come out, and for a second I'm so startled by them, I can't say anything else. That isn't why I was planning to have sex with Rob, to hear the words, I mean. I just wanted to get it over with. I think. Actually, I'm not sure why it seemed so important.
Speak of the devil, Allie mutters.
Then I smell lemon balm and Rob's planting a wet kiss on my cheek.
Hey, ladies.
He reaches over to take a fry from Elodie, and she moves her tray just out of reach. He laughs.
Hey, slammer. Did you get my note?
I got it. I look down at the table. I feel like if I meet his eyes, I'll forget everything. Forget the note, and how he left me alone, and how when he kisses me, he keeps his eyes open. At the same time, I don't really want anything to change.
So, what I miss?
Rob leans forward and puts his hands on the table, a little too hard, I think. Lindsay's Diet Coke jumps.
The party at Ken's and how Sam doesn't want to go,
Allie blurts out. Elodie elbows her in the side and Allie yelps. Rob swivels his head and looks at me. His face is completely expressionless.
Is that what you wanted to talk about?
No, well, kind of. I wasn't expecting him to mention the text, and it flusters me that I can't tell what he's thinking. His eyes look extra dark, almost cloudy. I try to smile at him, but I feel like my cheeks are all stuffed with cotton. I can't help but picture him swaying on his feet and holding up his hand and saying,
5 minutes. Well,
he straightens up and shrugs.
What then?
Lindsay, Allie, and Elodie are all staring at me. I can feel their eyes like they're emitting heat. I can't talk about it here. I mean, not now. I tip my head in their direction. Rob laughs, a short, harsh sound, and now I can tell he's mad and just hiding it.
Course not.
He backs away, both hands raised like he's warding something off.
How about this? You let me know when you're ready to talk. I'll wait to hear from you. I would never want to, you know, pressure you.
He elongates some of the words, and I can hear the sarcasm in his voice, just barely, but it's there. It's obvious, to me at least, that he's talking about way more than our having a talk. But before I can respond, he gives a flourish with his hand, a kind of bow, and then turns around and walks away.
Jeez.
Allie pushes around the turkey sandwich on her plate. What was that about?
You're not really fighting, are you, Sam?
Elodie asks, eyes wide.